Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, today's going to be a little different. In fact, I think it's going to be a whole lot of fun. We've got it's Wednesday, so I still have my typical Wednesday morning routine of the election correction report and the not quite ready for Facebook vaccine report, which I named because I can't post anything that I report during the vaccine report on Facebook because it would be immediately censored. I'd be canceled. I'd be sitting around for 30 days, you know, twiddling my thumbs when I really want to talk to folks that are giving me all kinds of information and things that we're using on the show. That's what makes it critical to as I said yesterday, speak in code. But I've wanted to do a show for a little bit, sort of bring, you know, in the back of my mind for a while. And every time I heard about Britney Spears being in a conservatorship, and every time I hear about, and then I heard, you know, more recently about our own congressman here in the first district, Matt Gaetz, who is advocating for Britney Spears and against conservatorships, and then wants to get her to Congress to testify and talk about this experience. I thought, this is kind of interesting. And of course, we're fortunate enough to have our own expert, investigative reporter, author, who does a whole bunch of stuff, you know, around the topic of family law, and that's Michael Volpe. Michael's been one of the few folks with us since the beginning for at least a couple of years. Michael's pretty intense. Michael has a lot of details. I mean, he knows his stuff so well. It's interesting talking to him because I do have to kind of, you know, ask questions and get to the details myself. But this is something, you know, that really strikes to the heart of public figures, you know, having the same rights as everybody else. I mean, just because you're famous, just because she has a $60 million estate, just because she happens to be drop-dead gorgeous and has a wonderful, you know, really, you know, sweet angelic singing voice when on some of the recordings I've heard. Yeah, some of the other ones are a little racier, and that's kind of fun too. But the point is, why should she be treated any worse than anybody else to be treated in family court? You know, are not the laws, you know, equal? I mean, do we not have the equal protection of the laws under the 14th Amendment? And so I thought it was interesting, and this is a subject I know very little about, and this is why it's so nice to have people that do know things about these things, you know, come on the show. So as much as I've been having fun with Free Britney posters all over Facebook, and I've been talking about this for a while, and I put a bunch of videos, which you people aren't watching for some reason. You know, I think you think that because she's, you know, a pop star as opposed to a, you know, a serious musician and singer, that you can't watch her stuff. Well, you're missing out on a lot because I found some really incredible recordings without the voice, you know, synthesizer, without all the glitz, without all the fast edits and all the things they do in videos, but live performances that are just outstanding that I would stack up against, you know, any entertainer anywhere in the world. I mean, they're brilliant. And she writes her own songs too. And so a lot of people don't do that. Most of the people that you hear singing are not writing their own songs. You know, the individual singers, the groups. Yeah, the groups write them. But a lot of times groups have other musicians sit in. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. And in fact, a lot of I was watching a Ringo Starr concert, you know, just on you know, AXS, Access TV. He's a great entertainer. He was fabulous. But when they played, I forgot what it was, Octopus's Garden, or one of the songs, one of the old Beatles songs, it has a brass section. So they just hit the recording, and all of a sudden, there's a brass band. Where did they come from? So a lot of stuff is thrown in. But what's really nice is when you get, you know, the unplugged, the acoustic, or you know, Britney Spears just with her natural voice at a piano. I mean, she's an excellent piano player too. And so the question is, should someone who's that famous, that well-known, that, you know, that rich, that, you know, popular, lose everything, lose all her rights, lose all her money, and have some, I can't really say it on the air, but, you know, what I think of her father. And as folks that listen to the show know, I'm not big on family relations anyway, just because of my own experience. And so anytime I hear something like this, you know, my skin begins to crawl and I want to reach out and, you know, strangle somebody. And so anybody that's a victim of other family members, of the courts, of, you know, unjust laws, corrupt, you know, attorneys on either side, corrupt judges, any of that kind of stuff, I just go crazy. And so we do, that's why we do a lot of family law stuff here on Action Radio. And also why I have a family law project that Michael pretty much takes care of. He does a great job with it. I mean, I monitor all the groups, but But the nice thing about Action Radio is I can delegate. I can delegate to people and say, here, run with this. See what you come up with. Be creative. Because this whole show is an experiment. I mean, it really is just a nonstop experiment. That's what we do here. I just completed another Santa Rosa Volunteer Founding Moments. I keep trying to make them short. They're supposed to be like 1 or 2 minutes, and this one's 8. So I'll play it a little bit later. We got Michael Volpe coming on in the second hour. You've got me for the first hour. If you want to talk to me, feel free, 215-383-3832. And this is a chance when it's just me, I get the chance to play, you know, all the things I don't get to play when we have people conversing. So that's why I purposely schedule time, you know, just for us to kind of chat a little bit. So here's a Biden PSA. I actually made this before the election, you know, warning you what would happen if, okay? And scarily, a lot of this has come true. So let me play this for you, and I'll be right back.
Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Okay, we're going to jump around a whole lot just because there are different things that interest me, and also because my computer completely wiped out this morning. I thought I was clicking the button to, hold off on the update, but apparently it updated. And when it did so, it ruined everything I had set up. So that's the exciting part of radio is when you're live and it's like, what should we talk about next? All right, so one of the disturbing things and things, like I say, I haven't had as much chance to review as I want to is an article on Dr. Peter McCullough. Now, Dr. Peter McCullough, one of my heroes in the entire COVID, you know, pandemic marketing campaign that's been going on, because he was the one that said that that the variants, really there aren't variants, you know, that if you're immune, if you got COVID, you're immune. And he's the one that's been talking about a lot of different stuff. So I found an article in, this is a new website, Humans Are Free. And there's another one that I'm going to find that somewhere I might report on it tomorrow. But anyway, the headline is Dr. Peter McCullough. This is our vaccine report, obviously. Yeah, I would say we're jumping back between vaccines and election reports just because. Dr. Peter McCullough, COVID vaccines have already killed 50,000 Americans, according to whistleblowers. Okay, let me read that again, just in case you got knocked off your seat or you changed lanes really suddenly if you're driving. Dr. Peter McCullough, COVID vaccines have already killed 50,000 Americans, according to whistleblowers. So what exactly is a whistleblower? Well, that's somebody who's in an organization who knows the organization has problems, who tries to tell the bosses that the organization has problems, and threatens to fire them if they don't shut the hell up. And then the whistleblower says, I can't let this go on. I have to get this out into the world. And they get, hopefully, whistleblower protection, but they usually end up being fired, you know, lose all their life savings. They get demonized, destroyed, you know, canceled, the whole bit. But they have the knowledge that they do the right thing, okay? And that's what I think carries a lot of these people through, the whistleblowers. And this is just scratching the surface. This is going to be a massive issue as it comes up more and more, that the CDC has whistleblowers, that the records may not be accurate, that maybe a whole lot more people died from the vaccine than are being reported, and that ultimately I believe more people will die from the vaccine than died from COVID. Okay, and why do I say that? Well, because the oft-reported comment that the CDC tries to deny, and of course all the COVID deniers, you know, in major media who don't want to report the facts, so they just want to, you know, get you to a vaccine, they figure everything's well. Well, let me digress for a second. There's a fascinating perception that COVID will kill you, and if you don't get a vaccine, you know, you're going to die. Okay, that's insane. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. But that's the current thought. I mean, these people are paranoid. They're panicked about this. Well, if you don't, you know, and this is because it's been so demonized, so crazy that. Hang on a second. I'll be right back. I'm sorry about that. And so this thing has been so demonized that people are, you know, you listen to them, people will die. People, you've got to get the vaccine or you're going to die. And if you get COVID, you're going to die. Okay. First of all, people under 18 have like a 99.999% chance. I mean, that's virtually immune You know, and that's without a vaccine. That's with nothing. That's just a natural immunity. People under 65, which includes me still, thank you, that would be 99.7 something, you know, or 99.9, whatever it is ridiculously high. So natural immunity is ridiculously high. And the comment that the CDC was making earlier that they're trying to hide or at least, you know, get away from is that only 6% of the people who they're reporting died, you know, of COVID actually died from COVID as opposed to dying with COVID. Now, that's a huge distinction, okay? So 6%, we figured this out the other day, 510,000. No, that's not that sort of one. 6%. Oh, hang on. Look at the calculator. Oh, lean back here. Okay. See, I make mistakes too. All right, so let's call 6%. That would be 0.06 times 600,000. Turns out to be 36,000 people. All right. Now, so 36,000 people approximately, you know, given the best estimates we have, actually died from COVID and nothing else, okay? Now, that's still a tragedy. That's still a problem. But it's like, what, a third of, or maybe slightly more than a third of how many people die from the flu every year? And we don't stop the world for that. We don't mask for that. We don't, you know, we don't destroy the economy for that. In fact, I was seeing something that 90,000 people have died from drug overdoses already. You know, well, you got 36,000 for COVID, 90,000 for drug overdoses. Drugs are three times more dangerous than COVID. Well, why aren't we, you know, taking a vaccine for fentanyl? I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is where we're going with this. But think about this for a second. If 50,000 Americans have died from the vaccine and only 36,000 people have died from COVID, that makes the vaccine almost twice as deadly as COVID itself. Now, think about that for a second, okay? Now, this is only just coming out. Now, I want to check into this website, you know, because I've seen this before. This isn't the first source on this. I'll look into Humans Are Free. But let's see what they say. This is Deborah Heine, and I've heard her stuff before. So this may be a copied interview from another source. She says, in an extraordinary interview last week, Dr. Peter McCullough, an American professor of medicine and vice chief of internal medicine at Baylor University, which means he's way more qualified than Dr. Fascist, to do anything. In fact, let me just have a little voice problem this morning. I'm sorry. I posted something on Facebook last week because I was curious what degrees Dr. Fascist has. That would be one Anthony Fauci for those of you who are new to the show. And when I looked it up, I found that he only has a medical degree. No specialty training, no education beyond this basic medical degree, no certificates, no he's not a virologist, okay? So here's the guy that's supposedly the expert that everybody's listening to. All he has is a medical degree. He's like your local GP. He's no more qualified. And not to say that GPs aren't qualified. They are, okay, because they have years of experience treating patients. But Dr. Fascist doesn't have years of experience treating patients. In fact, I don't think anybody can remember the last time he did treat a patient. So the guy's basically a grant-writing paper pusher, all right? And so the Biden insurrection, the folks that stole the White House, are getting up and pushing this non-virologist as the virus expert. Okay, virology is the study of viruses, okay? Virology, get it, right? So the only thing he has is, so he's got basically your basic medical degree, which for a lot of people is a jumping-off point, which makes Dr. Peter McCullough, who's the professor of medicine, I mean, he teaches people like Fauci, all right, you know, and vice chief of internal medicine at Baylor University. This is one smart dude. And he says, he declared that the world has been subjected to a form of bioterrorism. Well, as I called, you know, COVID yesterday, a medical genocide, okay, because basically what it is, they're killing people simply to sell vaccines. You know, this isn't even ideological. You know, I mean, the Holocaust is a horrible thing. But you could see the ideology and understand how horrible these people really were. Well, you know, these folks that are killing 500,000 people simply to make money, that's worse. You know, well, I don't know if it's I probably shouldn't say that. But you've got, you know, but it is, there's still Holocaust. Okay, if you're killing, you know, hundreds of thousands of people just so you can make money, you're like the lowest form of scum that the earth has ever produced, as far as I'm concerned. That's for Dr. Fascist. That's why I call him that. All right. So Dr. McCullough declared that the world has been subjected to a form of bioterrorism and that the suppression of early treatments for COVID-19, such as hydroxychloroquine, we've talked about that since March 2nd of 2020 before the pandemic even started, all right? That's where Action Radio was, because I asked questions, you know, and the first question I asked was, why do I need a vaccine for a disease that's already here? It's too late. It's here, okay? So you shouldn't be developing a vaccine for a virus that's already here. You should be developing a treatment and a cure and a preventive. Okay, that makes more sense. I'm not a doctor, and I know that. That's just basic logic, okay? So the other thing, too, is you don't have to be a doctor to do this stuff. You just have to be able to read what the doctors read and, you know, study what they say and listen to what they say. And you can judge for yourself, you know, because, you know, if you're listening to Dr. Fascist, that's your source of information. You know, an MD paper pusher who hasn't seen a patient in 30-some-odd years, okay. It's not the sort I'm going to trust. Anyway, so suppression of the early treatments for COVID-19, such as hydroxychloroquine. Okay, and we've talked about this a number of times. The reason that the cures and the treatments were suppressed was to sell vaccines. All roads lead to vaccines. Dr. Fascist knew back in 1986 that hydroxychloroquine and drugs like it stopped viruses. He knew in 2005 that hydroxychloroquine killed SARS-CoV-1. The predecessor to, yes, you guessed it, SARS-CoV-2, what we affectionately know as COVID-19. So he already knew hydroxychloroquine killed that virus. So to knowingly suppress, deny, demonize, and actually make, you know, to not authorize, to say that you can't use, to ban the use of hydroxychloroquine, you know, knowing that it cures COVID as a cure for COVID, that makes you a medical, you know, that makes you medical genocide. That is like the worst of the worst. Okay, you know what's the difference? You know, between a murderer and someone that withholds medical treatment. You know, if you're a doctor knowing the treatment, a life-saving treatment, and you say, "Oh no, that's the worst possible thing you can do. Don't do that," and that person dies, you're a murderer. Okay, so let's multiply this by what? 600,000. Put them all at Fauci's doorstep and Big Pharma and all these other folks and all the media and all the government people that should have known better. Yeah, that's where we stand right now. That alone is enough of a vaccine report to shock you. All right, so again, this is Dr. Peter McCullough. COVID vaccines have already killed 50,000 Americans, according to whistleblowers, June 20th, in the website Humans Are Free. And again, of course, I can't post it, but I'm looking for a new site, and I'm doing that today, looking at social media stuff. Apparently, there's a couple of new ones out there. Well, I'll see. Anyway. So he says, she says, Dr. McCullough made the explosive comments during a webinar on June 11th with Dr. Rainer Fulnisch, a German trial lawyer who believes the pandemic was planned. Yeah. So does Dr. Judy Mikovits, and so does Dr. David Martin, who have evidence of this. They're not just making it up, but they have evidence that this was a plandemic, hence the movie Plandemic. If you haven't seen it, you should. Okay. So Dr. Rainer Fulnisch also interviewed Dr. David Martin, and you should see that video too. I'm going to watch this one, but basically they're saying this is a crime against humanity, which it is. And the calling of this Nuremberg trial too is in preparation. Who, that's the World Health Organization, and world leaders will have to answer for crimes against humanity. This is probably the most important medical trial since the original Nuremberg trials, which are the ones that put the Nazi war criminals on trial, many of whom were hung for their crimes. Okay, many of whom committed suicide before they were hung, like Goering, the coward, and a bunch of other folks. Some got life imprisonment, some escaped, some, you know, but out of the Nuremberg trials, I think in 1947, came the Nuremberg Code. And the Nuremberg Code relates to medical experiments because of the homicidal Dr. Mengele, the worst doctor in history up until our very own Tony Fauci, Dr. Fascist. Okay. Dr. Mengele performed horrible medical experiments himself. So he actually did it himself. Okay, but whether you do it yourself or whether you cause, you know, hundreds of thousands of people to die because you withhold medical treatment and you use the government to block it, I don't really see a whole lot of difference. I'm sorry. You know, the intent is still there. Okay, whether you actually do the action yourself, the intent is still there. If you hire somebody to kill somebody, are you any less guilty of murder? No, you're not, even though you didn't pull the trigger. Okay, same thing here. Did he actively kill, you know, 600,000 people himself by his actions? You know, did he physically kill them? No. But he caused them to be killed. So the intent is still the same. So that's why I put him as a genocidal, psychopathic vaccine drug pusher. One Dr. Anthony Fauci. Gee, what if I get censored for that? If the leftist news knew what I was talking about. Well, go ahead, share the show with them. See what they say. Let's get this all out in the open. So Nuremberg trial number two. I don't know anything about it yet. I think it's still in the works. I think people are still working on how to do this. But I think there has to be a Nuremberg trial number two for the WHO. That's the World Health Organization, not the band. Okay, the WHO, China, Dr. Fascist, and all our health bureaucrats and executives of Big Pharma worldwide, especially Moderna. You know, all the people that are making billions of dollars. And then, of course, you got to put the high-tech people, the big tech people, you know, Zuckerberg, Dorsey. You know, the Zuckerberg who heads up Facebook, Dorsey who heads up Twitter. I don't know who heads up Instagram, and the people that run Google. they have to be in on this trial as well, because they were suppressing the information. They're censoring anybody who said hydroxychloroquine cures COVID. Guess who's been saying since before the pandemic that hydroxychloroquine cures COVID? Me. Jeez, I've been saying it, you know, and so because of that, I stand by it. Back to the article. McCullough said he believes the bioterrorism has come in two stages. The first wave being the rollout of the coronavirus. Oh, yeah, because that was planned. Coronavirus is engineered. All right. We know it's engineered in the Wuhan lab. All those folks investigating the Wuhan lab is great, but that you're in the wrong ballpark. Okay. The real investigation is the origin of the vaccine. That's something that I started several months ago. Okay. So let's get back to the article. Rollout of the dangerous vaccine. Okay. So he says two stages. All right. First wave being the rollout of the coronavirus, and the second, the rollout of the dangerous vaccines, which he said may already be responsible for the deaths of up to 50,000 Americans. That would be Vietnam. Okay. If you're looking for a comparison, I think we lost 53,000 Americans in Vietnam over the course of years. Okay. These vaccines have killed in less than a year 50,000 Americans, if this is true. I'm still investigating, but we've got to find the whistleblowers. Guess what I'll be following up on next week? You know, we're going to do a whole show on CDC whistleblowers. All right. Dr. McCullough practices internal medicine and cardiology, is the editor of Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine, senior editor of the American Journal of Cardiology, editor of the textbook Cardiorenal Medicine, that would be heart and kidney, and president of the Cardiorenal Society. This guy knows his stuff. Okay, so I give you these citations so that you can look them up. You don't have to take my word for it. You know, look it up. Look up, you know, CDC whistleblowers. Guess what I'm going to be doing over the weekend, all right? He says the first wave of bioterrorism is a respiratory virus that spread across the world and affected relatively few people, about 1% of many populations, but generated great fear. That's what McCullough says. The first wave of the bioterrorism is a respiratory virus that spread across the world and affected relatively few people. Isn't that amazing? It's true. If we figure 36,000 people have died out of 330 million people, that's not a large percentage. Again, about one-third of the amount of people that die from the flu every year, okay? That's not a pandemic that, unless you use that to generate fear. So the real pandemic is fear. That's the disease. That's the virus. The real virus is fear. So if you think of, I never thought about this till just now, but if you think of virus, if you think of a fear as a virus, okay, this might be a whole new concept. I might do a show on this too. I don't like this idea. Hey, call me if you want, 215-383-3832. Fear is the virus. I'm writing that in big capital letters in my notes here. And what do you think about that? What if COVID is not the virus? What if fear is the virus? What if fear is a virus far stronger? What if fear is spread by people, by seeing people wear masks? What if fear is spread by lockdowns? What if the virus of fear is spread through all these oppressive government policies when those same government people go to restaurants like the French Laundry, one of the most expensive in the country, Gavin Newsom, you know, without masks, without social distance, without all the things they make us do? What if Democrats ride a plane to Washington from Texas, abdicating their responsibility, you know, without a mask and a bunch of Miller Lite beer sitting next to them? You know, now they're calling it a super spreader event. I think that's kind of funny. Maybe they're just weak people and they have no immune system because they've been wearing masks, you know, for the last year. Wouldn't that be interesting to find out? See, that hasn't been talked about yet. So if this is a super spreader event, see, healthy people who don't wear masks, you know, aren't coming down with this from my just anecdotal knowledge, me being one of them. I'm a healthy person, doesn't wear a mask, never has, you know, except for a couple of job situations and, you know, that doesn't really matter. The point is I don't wear one. And the point of that is I've ever since I think I got COVID, you know, a year and a half ago, I've been fine. So healthy people who don't wear masks, who don't lock down, who get out in the fresh air, who do their normal life, seem to be doing quite well. People who lock down, wear masks, isolate themselves at home, and then suddenly go on an airplane seem to be coming down sick. Okay. So this is fascinating. But fear is the virus. Fear is the virus. The coronavirus itself is just a flu bug, basically. You know, genetically engineered to be more dangerous, even though it turns out not to be, because our immune system apparently is stronger than the flu bug they engineered. That's because they suck at engineering viruses, obviously. All right. So let me get back to this. This is kind of interesting. I may spend the whole viral report on just this one article, because I think this is so staggering that the whistleblowers are coming out saying over 50,000 people have died. Okay. I can't put that anywhere on social media. You just have to share the show. All right. 1%. All right. So here we go. So let me start again. Just because, I have digressed slightly. The first wave of the bioterrorism is a respiratory virus that spread across the world and affected relatively few people. Now, how did it spread across the world? Well, China let everybody travel across the world. That's how it spread. You know, Fauci said, this is no big deal. You know, when it initially came out, because he wanted it thoroughly entrenched in this country. He wanted enough COVID-19 in this country before he said, oh, wait a minute, time to wear masks and lockdown. Look at all these people that are dying from COVID, even though they made it most of the numbers. So he actually, part of the engineering of the bioterrorism was to make sure that the disease was fully implanted in nations across the world before they said it was a problem. Same problem. Genocidal, psychopathic, vaccine, drug pushers. About 1% of many populations. 1%. Isn't that interesting? 1%. 1% of 300 million is 3 million. Interesting. All of which could have been treated by hydroxychloroquine. Anyway. So he says, so 1% of the population, but generated great fear. McCullough explained during the Oval Media webinar with other doctors. You have to get that. Just look it up. Okay. He noted that the virus targeted mostly the frail and the elderly, but for otherwise well people, it was much like having the common cold. It was for me. When I had it, and like I say, I didn't get tested, so I can't confirm absolutely 100%, but I had the dry cough for 2 weeks. I've got the shows to prove it. Just listen to my shows late December, early January 2020, late December 2019. I sounded terrible. Was I sick? Yeah. Was I really sick for the hospital? No. And I'm over 60. Okay. And so I'm in that higher risk group. But I took 2 days off, did nothing, slept, recovered, was fine. No hydroxychloroquine because I knew about it then, but I didn't know that was COVID because we hadn't really heard about COVID yet. I found out the next month. I thought, oh, gee, here's the cure. Here's the cure in case it happens again. Okay, so this is fascinating to me. All right, so Dr. McCullough later elaborated that he has treated many patients with the disease, written papers on it, had the disease himself, and has also seen a death in his own family due to COVID. Okay, so that's always a tragedy. You know, when somebody dies from COVID or you lose somebody. But the bigger tragedy is suppressing the cure that these people knew about, that Dr. Fascist knew about, okay, in order to sell vaccines, to direct people away from preventives, to direct people away from boosting your immune system, to direct people away from the cures, so that the only possible option was vaccines, so that big pharma and the health bureaucrats who had the royalties and the patents and actually manufactured the drug itself, the messenger RNA, made the most money possible. That's what this is all about. And they had to have a pandemic so they could do it, you know, with an emergency authorization, because if they waited 10 years for this to be tested like a normal vaccine, A, COVID would be long gone. We'd all be immune to it. And B, they didn't want their money in 10 years. They wanted it now, which is the essence of greed. And they're obsessed with getting it. And so this is quite a fascinating thing. You know, because the normal course of a virus is about 10 weeks from what I've heard. And that makes sense, because if this hit end of January 2020, peaked April 15th, tax day, interesting coincidence, and then it was basically headed for zero as of July 4th. Okay, so from the end of January to July, January, February, March, April, May, June, July, that's about, 6 months. It's a little longer than 10 weeks, but let me see, 10 weeks would be, 4 weeks to a month, 4 to 12 would be 3 months, a little bit longer. Okay, but after July 4th, that's when the CDC changed how they measured all the numbers. And all of a sudden, this disease that was headed for zero deaths suddenly spiked back up. What a surprise. Did COVID get more deadly? No. They changed how they measured the figures. And they counted cases and infections and all this other nonsense. That's how they kept the pandemic going beyond when it ended, which is, basically July 4th, over a year ago. All right. Dr. McCullough later elaborated that he has treated many patients with the disease, written papers on it, had the disease. Okay, I already read that. I'm sorry. The doctor said he believes that fear of the virus was used very quickly to generate policies that would hugely impact human life, such as the draconian lockdowns. This is what I've said, too. It's nice to know that I agree with these people that really know, more about this than I ever will. McCullough says every single thing that was done in public health in response to the pandemic made it worse. Let me try that again. Okay. Bet you didn't hear that on the news. Every single thing that was done in public health in response to the pandemic made it worse. Lockdowns, masks, isolation, depression, suicide, addiction, abuse, every crime you can think of, and every crime against the people, every victim was worse because of everything the government did. Now, who are the public health professionals? The experts, Dr. Fascist, the Surgeon General, the FDA, the NIH, the CDC, your state Surgeon General, your governors who locked down, your mayors who locked down. These are all the people that made it worse, and they have to answer for that. Even our own Governor DeSantis. Fortunately, he confessed. He fessed up and said, you know, I screwed up. Okay, I give him that. I still want to understand what his thought process was to initially impose lockdowns on Florida, because I called him a dictator at that point. There's no reason for this. You know, this is stupid. This is dumb. This is going to cause far more problems than the virus itself. I said that back in March. I've got a video to prove it. Okay, you want me? I've got the video to prove it. Go to the Action Radio Video Project. It's right there. Just keep scrolling down. You'll find it. And they're in a white and blue striped shirt, you know, sitting in the gazebo in Milton. It was March 20th of 2020. And I said, hey, you're violating our rights for no reason. Okay. Back to the article. McCullough explained that early on, as a doctor treating COVID patients, he came up with an early treatment regimen for those struck with the virus, which reduced hospital stays by about 85%. That's the same thing Dr. Solanko found. This is a common figure, 85% cure rate with hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin D, vitamin C, fresh air, sunshine, etc. And he said he began publishing papers on what he learned. The doctor noted that he was, quote, met with resistance at all levels in terms of actually treating patients and publishing his papers. Suppression of medical information. Suppression of life-saving cures is murder as far as I'm concerned. Okay, let's see what happens with this NURM2. He says, McCullough says, fortunately, I had enough publication strength to publish the only two papers in the entire medical literature that teaches doctors how to treat COVID-19 patients at home to prevent hospitalization. Not bad, huh? Okay. So there's certain doctors, Dr. Simone Gold, Dr. Stella Emanuel, and if I leave anybody out, you know, Dr. Harvey Risch at Yale, he's an epidemiologist. Of course, my friend, Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Judy Mikovits. You know, there are hero doctors out there who have tried to get the word out, but they've all been suppressed by big tech, by basically they're murderers of people so that they can either sell vaccines or make money on the investments in companies that sell vaccines. You know, money for death. Be a great show title too. Money for death. How much death are you willing to tolerate for how much money? It's an interesting question. I think we should ask Zuckerberg and Dorsey and some of these folks, how much money is worth how many deaths? Is it worth billions of dollars to you to kill 600,000 people? And apparently the answer is yes, because it's exactly what they did. Okay? More stuff here. What we have discovered, this is Dr. McCullough again, what we have discovered is that the suppression of early treatment was tightly linked to the development of a vaccine. No, you know what? Yeah. And the entire program, and in a sense, bioterrorism phase one was rolled out. And was really about keeping the population in fear and in isolation. That's what the lockdowns are all about, keeping you isolated so you don't talk to each other, censoring on social media. Okay. If you're isolated and all alone, you don't realize how many other people think the same way. Curtis yesterday was a perfect example. Curtis, who's going to be our new Gen Z reporter, got to get back in touch with him. But anyway, he said the same thing. He says, I've been thinking these things, and I kept thinking it was just me who was asking all these questions. No. Millions of people are asking these questions. The problem is they've kept the millions of you from talking to each other. That's the problem. Okay. So it's really about keeping the population in fear and in isolation, preparing them to accept the vaccine, which appears to be phase two of a bioterrorism operation. Okay. Are you surprised? I'm not. McCullough explained that both the coronavirus and the vaccines deliver, quote, to the human body, the spike protein, which is the gain-of-function target of his bioterrorism research. I hope somebody's protecting this guy. God protect this guy, because he's a lifesaver. He's the one that might get to it. Okay, so here's what I understand. When they created the vaccine, the messenger RNA vaccine for coronavirus, before they created the coronavirus, okay, SARS-CoV-2, I think, came after the vaccine. So they created the vaccine first. You know, they hacked the software of life, as the Dr. Zaks of Moderna said in 2017. Okay, 2017, that's 3 years before COVID, right? So they have these messenger RNA vaccines. They've hacked the software of life. They can basically, you know, make up vaccines on a computer. So what could go wrong? I don't know, viruses? Interesting term, isn't it? All right. Anyway, so they engineered SARS-CoV-2 to fit the viruses that are already engineered. That's how I believe this went down. All right. And so, but there's a problem. is a problem that they either didn't foresee or didn't care about. And that is that these spike proteins, you know, you look at, you see any news program, right? They'll show you these, you see a round cell, like a big basketball. It's a big cell, right? And around it are all these triangle things sticking out. Those are the spike proteins. Those are the things that lock onto other proteins on other cells, particularly, you know, upper respiratory lung cells. They attach to them, and that's how this virus gets spread. Okay. So, and as each virus makes millions more viruses, that's, they eventually take over your body, and if bad enough, will kill you. Okay. That's why people die of the flu. All right. Because they don't have the immune system to fight it. That's why a lot of people die of the flu, but they're usually very old, very frail, and very, you know, they have a bunch of other stuff. Everybody dies of something, usually a lot of somethings. Okay. So that's what's going on there. And so these spike proteins apparently are breaking off those cells. All those little triangle little thingies on the outside of the cell that look so pretty, you know, nice purple or red ones, depending on how they do it, they're breaking off. And what are they doing? Well, they're going into your bloodstream, and they're attaching to red blood cells, and they're causing red blood cells to clump together in what we know as clots. In the heart, those clots are known as thrombosis or thrombocytosis or something, I guess is the term for the disease. They go into your brain, your lungs, your different organs. You know, you got blood clots all over your body, and it's killing people. Okay, so the vaccine, supposedly to save you, is actually having the spike proteins break off, and it's killing people through blood clots. Okay, that's what's going on. All right, now, if you doubt me, listen to our past shows with Dr. Judy Mikovits. You know, we had Dr. Zelenko on. You know, I'll get him back on. You know, or just look up, you know, look up spike proteins, blood clots, and COVID vaccines. It's all there. You just have to dig a little bit. They haven't suppressed the internet entirely, but. Hopefully these articles. And if you get an article, save it to your computer because you never know, it might be gone next week. Though somebody will find it, whoop, can't have that information out there. All right. So gain of function too. So he acknowledges, back to the article. This is still the same article. I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. After this I'll play my Senator Rose Volunteers on Any Federalist Too. It's long, but I think it's very interesting. I certainly had a great time making it. And the research that goes into these, you know, I'm learning so much from doing, you know, Federalist Papers, but I'm learning a ton more from doing the Anti-Federalist Papers. I tend to find myself an Anti-Federalist. In fact, if I ever start a political party, it's probably going to be the Anti-Federalist Party. I think that's something we need to look into. Okay. Article says, he acknowledged that he couldn't come out and say all that. Yeah, no kidding. On national television because the medical establishment has done such a thorough job of propagandizing the issue. Again, the virus is not COVID. The virus is fear. Fear is the virus that spread across the country. Fear is what's killing people. Lack of knowledge generated by that fear is what's killing people. All right. He says, what we have learned over time is that we could no longer communicate with government agencies. We actually couldn't communicate with our propagandized colleagues in major medical centers, all of which appear to be under a spell, almost as if they've been hypnotized. Yeah, zombie apocalypse, okay? So when your job says you can't go to work without a vaccine, or you can't, or your kids can't go to school without a vaccine, they're propagandized. They've got the fear virus. They've got the COVID fear virus, and you need to educate them or keep your kids out of school or just get a new job. I mean, that's just, you know, in fact, there are going to be jobs hopefully popping up, you know, with companies that know what's going on, bosses that know what's going on. And we're dividing into two groups of people, as I said yesterday, the RNAs and the DNAs. Okay, the DNAs have body integrity. We have our original DNA. We are as God created us. Okay, we have not been messed with genetically. Well, except for GMOs and things like that. But the RNAs are the folks that took the vaccine that have their entire genetic makeup changed by software a substance that, as Moderna, you know, Dr. Zaks, hacks the software of life. Well, quite frankly, I don't want the software of my life hacked. I don't want a computer virus, you know, that actually makes a synthetic, you know, messenger RNA virus. So they take computer code and make genetic code living material out of it. I don't know how that process works. I'm going to talk about that too, but I'm really curious. So let me get back to the article here because this is fascinating. McCullough says good doctors are doing unthinkable things like injecting biologically active messenger RNA. That's just what I was talking about, that produces this pathogenic spike protein into pregnant women. I think when these doctors wake up from their trance, they're going to be shocked to think what they've done to people. He says, and this is echoing what Dr. Harvey Risch, I told you, I've been in touch with Harvey Risch, right? Professor at the Yale School of Public Health told Fox News host Laura Ingraham during an interview last month. I'm going to get that interview too. Anyway, McCullough told Fulmisch, the German attorney, that last summer he started an early treatment initiative to keep COVID patients out of the hospital, which involved organizing multiple groups of medical doctors in the United States and abroad. the doctor, America's Frontline Doctors does the same thing. Okay. Or you can go to, I think, Stella Emanuel, frontlinedoctors.com, and you'll be able to find places where you can get hydroxychloroquine. Okay. It's available. It's not banned. Okay. The FDA refuses to authorize it, so you can't use it for a COVID treatment, but you can still get it from doctors that are willing to prescribe it to you. So it's not banned because hydroxychloroquine has so many other uses. So they ban the use of it for treating COVID, which of course it does very well, but they don't ban the use of it for anything else. And there's your loophole. That's how you get around this. All right. McCullough told Fulmich last summer, he started, okay, I read that. The doctor noted that some governments tried to block these doctors from providing the treatments, but with the help of the Association of Physicians and Surgeons. That's the group that I read the article from yesterday. Okay. This is the same group. It's funny how these things tie together. The Association of Physicians and Surgeons, they were able to put out a home patient guide, and in the U.S. organized four different telemedical services. Dr. Zelenko has one too. DrZelenko.com, I think, just look him up. He does telemedicine also and can prescribe to you hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin D, C, et cetera. I think Stella Emanuel can do that also. And I'm not sure about Dr. Simone Gold, but I would guess so. But anyway. Anyway, Association of Physicians and Surgeons, they were able to put out a home patient guide in the U.S., organized four different telemedical services and 15 regional telemedical services. This way, people who were stricken with COVID-19 were able to call in to these services and get the medications they needed prescribed to local pharmacies or mail-order distribution pharmacies, okay? He says, without the government, this is McCullough again. This is probably the whole video, so I guess we're getting the whole video now. I just found this article late yesterday. But I figured I wanted to start. I didn't know it was going to take up most of the hour, but this is so fascinating. This is where we're going. Okay. Whistleblowers in the CDC, 50,000 people killed with vaccines so far. And they're going door to door to make sure everybody else gets it. I don't think so. Quote, without the government really even understanding what was going on. Biden doesn't understand anything that's going on. Without the government really understanding what was going on, we crushed the epidemic curve of the United States, McCullough claimed. Yeah. They cured it. Okay. And so you want to slow the spread, you stop the spread. So in other words, Trump, who's been duped from the very beginning, who went along with the Fauci propaganda, and I'm sorry to say this, but it's true. He's been lied to, and he's still being lied to. He still believes in these horrible messenger RNA substances that people are injecting. Okay. And that's a problem. And that's one of the biggest problems with him coming back into office, which he should be because he won the election. But I don't know if I want him back unless he goes through a strong course in reality from Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Gold, Dr. Mikovits, you know, Dr. McCullough, Dr. Risch, and some of these other people and say, hey, look, you doofus, you got lied to, and you need to fix this, okay? I think it's burst through all the volume things. But basically, Trump's been lied to, and he needs to fix what the problems that he caused in his last year of his first term. Toward the end of December and January, back to the article, we basically took care of the pandemic with about 500 doctors and telemedicine services, and to this day, we treat about 25% of the U.S. COVID-19 population that are actually at high risk, over age 50, oh, that's me, with medical problems that present with severe symptoms. I'm saying, if I ever get severe symptoms, believe me, I'm going to call these folks. I'm going to be on the phone immediately. You know, ship it to my local pharmacy, and I know where to go, too. Anyway, the doctor said that his belief that the suppression of early treatment was tightly linked to the vaccines is what has led him to focus his attention on warning the public about the vaccines. How many times have I said this? How many months have I said this? All roads lead to vaccines. From the day, you know, from years ago, this was planned out from years ago, that there would be no options when they engineered COVID-19 except for vaccines. And they've successfully done that by government policy, not by health, not by reality, because, you know, but you know what? We're fighting back, and it's happening. Last thing here. We know that this phase two of bioterrorism, we know that this is phase two of bioterrorism. We don't know who's behind it, but we know that they want a needle in every arm to inject messenger RNA or adenoviral DNA into every human being. He said, they want every human being. Dr. Layer warned that the experimental vaccines could ultimately lead to cancers and sterilize young women. Dr. McCullough said his goal is to set apart a large group of people that the system cannot get to, which would include those who have already had the virus, that'd be me, those who I believe I can get tested for it and prove it, if you know, maybe I should do that. Anyway, already had the virus, those with immunity, children, pregnant women, and childbearing women. Well, yeah, I want to be that group just because I don't want it. I don't want the vaccine. I got a caller. Hang on, caller. I'm on a roll here. The cardiologist went on to say that because there is no clinical benefit in young people whatsoever to get the vaccine, even one case of myocarditis or pericarditis, those are heart disease. I'm not sure. I think myocarditis is swelling of the heart. Pericarditis, I don't know. Following the shots is too many. Okay, even one case is too many. If it saves one life, it's not worth having the vaccine. Let's use liberal logic on what they use for gun control. If it saves one life, it's not worth doing. Okay, think about that. All right, how about another one? My body, my choice. There's another one. Okay, let's live by the slogan. Let's make the left live by their own slogans. This is a leftist thing too, because they want everybody injected. You notice it's not the Republicans who are screaming and knocking on doors. It's the Democrats. You notice it's not the Republicans. You know, as bad as they are, the Gelding Party, it's not the Republicans who are you know, trying to force this on people and try to have jobs, you know, make sure you get it and hospital staff make sure they get it and the schools make sure the kids get it. No, it's Democrats. Okay, you look at Sebelius, a former Obama official. You shouldn't be able to go back to work unless you have messenger RNA shot. Well, excuse me, but screw you. No, not happening. All right, I can calls mounting up here. Let me hold off in a bit. There's more to this article, but it's too fascinating. In fact, let me get Josie on right now. I'm going to look up my second caller because that's a new number. And let's see what's going on here. Josie, what do you think? 50,000 people possibly dead because of – yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I think it's about 11,000 by now. A few weeks back, it was about 10,000 dead from the vaccine.
Yeah, what about 50,000?
I was just going to ask you.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's going to be – well, Judy Mikovich says it's going to be over 50 million dead people, innocent people from the vaccine.
I don't remember that figure. We'd have to check it, but yeah, it's possible. Yeah. Okay,
More and more stories I'm listening and hearing nurses coming in and at the store, you know, and they're there with the patients, so they're talking a lot. But yeah. I was wondering, asking you this morning, one of my friends from church, she's about 84, 85, and her son started having problems. He thought he had COVID and he was breathing hard, you know, like out of breath. And he think he had pneumonia also, so he checked himself in the hospital in Jacksonville. And I told my girlfriend's girlfriend, I said, tell her to get him out of there. Please get him out. Now he's under the ventilator. So
I am so sorry. You know, we hear these stories.
I know.
Early treatment is what works. All right. So hold on a second. I've only got a few minutes because I want to make sure I play my my Santa Rosa Volunteers before Michael gets here and we talk about Britney Spears. We're going to totally change the subject. Don't go away. No, don't go away yet. I got a new caller. I want to check this in here and see.
Okay.
Let me make our new caller live. So let's see what's going on. 850 local area code. Welcome to Action Radio. Yeah, that's you. Going once, going twice. Okay. So people call in sometimes and they want to just listen. But if you call the show, I'm going to put you on the air.
Yeah.
Listen on blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Listen on your phone, listen on your computer, listen on your tablet, listen on anything you want. But if you call the show to listen, that's just going to tie up our phone line.
It's going to be on.
Okay, anyway. They could have. They had the chance.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, so go ahead. Yeah.
So now they have him under the ventilator, so we cannot get him out. I mean, I don't want to scare the mom because she's kind of like, she don't understand all this stuff, you know. The
call the telemedicine. Call Dr. Emmanuel. Call Dr. McCullough. You know, look up a telemedicine service. Have them talk to the doctors directly. Or you get a hold of them and have them talk to the mother directly. No, I would do that. I would do that now. I would hang up the phone. Seriously. Hang up the phone.
I know.
You know, and just listen to the podcast later. Get a hold of one of these telemedical services, or any pharmacy you know that can prescribe this stuff. Or I think you need a doctor. Go to Dr. Zelenko's website. I would go right now. I'm serious. I'm not trying to, you know, cut off your phone call. But this is
but
more important
not
than
come out alive. Let me tell you.
Exactly. Yeah. You can listen to this anytime.
Yeah. Okay. I'll talk to you later.
Sounds good. Thanks, Josie. Let me know what happens.
Goodbye. Goodbye
now. So this is what Action Radio is all about. Okay, we give you the solution, then we ask you to do something about it. Okay, my listening caller, you can stick around for a while. I'll see if I can check with you again in a few minutes. I want to play something new for you. The Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to go over all our founding documents. And although they were supposed to be like a minute or two, I kind of get carried away and give you a lot more information because there's so much in our Federalist Papers and Anti-Federalist Papers that I never suspected that I'm just going to go with making sure you get the information. It's more important than that than to just, you know, just keep to a time limit. All right, here we go. I'll be back in a little bit.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. It's funny how all the writing from our founding, all the authors, think that multiple paragraphs of preamble is somehow preferable to getting to the main points. Anti-Federalist number 2, like every other paper I've read so far, has several paragraphs of introduction, but the main points, the really important stuff, is at the bottom. If you don't have time, if you don't have the time of a quill pen and horse society with no internet, I advise starting these Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers about halfway through. Anti-Federalist number 2 was written by William Grayson, June 11, 1788. He, like all the Anti-Federalists, questioned the need for a Constitution at all, when all the convention was really asked to do was update the Articles of Confederation. Why an arrogant group of elitists gathered in Philadelphia at this constitutional convention to totally change everything from a confederation of independent states, more like independent nations, to a union of United States, especially since, except for a few exceptions, the people, as in we the people, the folks government is supposed to serve, were for the most part happy with their independent states. Let's get into his bombshells in the last few paragraphs of his Anti-Federalist paper. Grayson says this: there are certain modes of governing the people which will succeed. There are others which will not. The idea of consolidation is abhorrent to the people of this country. How were the sentiments of the people before the meeting of the Convention of Philadelphia? They had only one object in view. Their ideas reached no farther than to give the general government the 5 per centum impost and the regulation of trade. When it was agitated in Congress, in a committee of the whole, this was all that was asked, or was deemed necessary. Since that period, their views have extended much farther. Horrors have been greatly magnified since the rising of the convention. William Grayson has a theme in his paper about how the people want to be governed, and not how the elites think the people want to be governed. He highlights that in the people sent their representatives to the convention in Philadelphia to regulate trade among the states and run the government by taxing imports at 5% through an impost, so that the importing companies paid for the U.S. government and the people didn't. My source on impost is the Duke University Library Answer Person. The real brilliance of William Grayson, something I believe is lost to history for those who do not read the Anti-Federalist papers, is his analysis of the big picture of government. He has already stated that the people wanted basically 2 issues solved, not an entire form of government created. He also has an alternative to the Constitution with which he concludes his analysis. The 2 choices of the convention in Philadelphia were to amend the Articles of Confederation so that they created a system that worked, which is what the Anti-Federalists wanted, or to ratify the Constitution, which did come out of that convention, which is what the Federalists wanted. In opposition to that outcome, Grayson says next, "But what would I do on the present occasion to remedy the existing defects of the present Confederation? There are 2 opinions prevailing in the world. The one, that mankind can only be governed by force. The other, that they are capable of freedom and a good government. Under a supposition that mankind can govern themselves, I would recommend that the present Confederation should be amended. Give Congress the regulation of commerce, infuse new strength and spirit into the state governments, for when the component parts are strong, it will give energy to the government, although it be otherwise weak." This is almost Orwellian, but in a good sense. What William Grayson is saying, and I agree, that in government, weakness is strength. It sounds like a contradiction, but it's really a guarantee, because neither the people nor the individual can be ruled by force by a government that is too weak. So our guarantee in the strength of the people and the people to exercise their individual rights
is in the gradual weakening of government power and replacing that with the gradual increase in the power of the people. Because ultimately, what Grayson is saying is that only through a purposefully and responsibly weak government will the people be capable of exercising freedom and to receive a good government. I may have to think, or rethink actually, our entire strategy here at Action Radio based on this. I have plans to disarm the bureaucracies and abolish the FBI, but I may have to reevaluate the idea of a responsibly weak government so that the people are not only capable of freedom, but actively participating in it, because the only good government is a responsibly weak one, not one that can rule by force. Guess what we have today? William Grayson ends with his practical solutions now that he has outlined his overall principles. He says, apportion the public debts in such a manner as to throw the unpopular ones on the back lands. Call only for requisitions for the foreign interest and aid them by loans. Keep on so till the American character be marked with some certain features. We are yet too young to know what we are fit for. The continual migration of people from Europe and the sentiment of new countries on our western frontiers are strong arguments against making new experiments now in government. When these things are removed, we can, with greater prospect of success, devise changes. We ought to consider, as Montesquieu says, whether the construction of the government be suitable to the genius and disposition of the people, as well as a variety of other circumstances. In other words, pay the debts with the sale of land so the debts don't become overwhelming in time. Avoid any foreign aid that isn't a loan. Wait until the unique American character emerges from the colonies before imposing an entirely new form of government through a constitution. Hold off on creating a new government system until immigration from Europe and Asia has stabilized and enough people are here. And only after all this, and our true American character has emerged, should we create a government system equal to the people and their freedom, and not force the people to live under the imposed government that goes way beyond what the people ever intended. Oh, if we only could have seen how that would have worked out. A source for this report is federalistpapers.org. The anti-federalist paper source is selfeducatedamerican.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. I love that report. I mean, I really do. And just coincidentally, we have David with us on the line here. Good timing, huh, David? Did you like our Santa Rosa Volunteer report? How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing this morning?
I'm on a roll. We only have about 3 minutes before Michael Volpe gets here, and we're going to talk about Britney Spears. So I'll give this to you. And of course, you're always welcome to call back anytime. What's going on? What's happening? What you got?
Well, not a whole lot. Definitely enjoying the founding moments. Those are extremely educational. I've been sharing those with our whole email chain.
Wow.
The Volunteers has also been working on a Patriot ticket for the next year's election. So, looking at Shannon Rice, one of your welcome guests on a weekly basis. She's running for school board, so she's definitely got support and hope for her to be in that position.
Yeah.
County Commission and all of the BOCC issues we have here in Santa Rosa County is definitely taking a lot of our time.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, so if you're going to have a Patriot ticket, when would you be able to present that, or do you want to see who's on the ballot? I mean, it's early for 2022. We've got, you know, another year, actually over a year to go before that election. So it's interesting. We have, I guess it really starts a year ahead of time. So this November, October, things are going to get moving. And then, of course, we'll have the election after that. And then the new Congress. And hopefully, you know, the old president will be back, you know, new president back sooner, and of course Congress back in January of 2023. Interesting stuff going on. Do you have a title at Santa Rosa Volunteers? I've forgotten exactly, you know, where you are there, but or maybe not. You know, I know you do some great work with those folks, and I appreciate it.
Yep, me and Dennis are both co-founders, so we both started Santa Rosa Volunteers together.
Okay, great. Listen, Dennis is welcome on too. I know he's really busy, but feel free anytime. This is great. And so you got the SRV 1776.com website. Anything else? Any other Facebook pages or websites you want to talk about?
So folks can find you. We have the Arise Patriots Facebook page. Mm-hmm. We started that with the tour that was going on that we brought to Milton, but we've since converted that into an extension of the Santa Rosa Volunteers. So if you go on the website, those links are there, or you can join us, follow us right there on Facebook as well.
Yeah, I'm a frequent contributor. So, you know, I just wanted to just make sure we got all our stuff out there, but I've contributed to Arise Patriots. You know, usually I put most of the shows on there. So if I get too much on there, let me know. There's a lot of stuff going on here at Action Radio. Yeah.
Okay. The more content, the better, and then it keeps Dennis from posting so many memes, maybe.
Actually, we got a call here. Hang on a second. Let me make sure to see if that's Michael or that's no, that's Michael. He's on now. So let me just Michael, hold on for just a second. We'll get right to you in just a little bit. Oh, he's so timely. So this is, you know, we haven't had really a good chance to cover it, but other activities going on. We got Shannon Rice, you know, for school board. And for those folks that think I'm a journalist, I got news for you. I'm not. I'm an advocate. Okay. So when you see me taking positions, when you see me supporting candidates, you think, well, that's not very objective. The last thing I am is objective. And the last thing that Santa Rosa Volunteers we're not objective here, okay? We're advocates. And so this is why I appreciate what you do. And so anytime you have a new campaign or a new person, or if you want to bring someone on, you know, I mean, Shannon's on every week. You're welcome to call Shannon during her, you know, morning broadcast Monday morning. But if you have someone that you want to introduce to us or you know, get them some radio time and experience and practice and, you know, time with me. And I ask a lot of questions. I mean, I don't hold back, but I think that's always good for people to do that. So anybody else wanting to let me know? Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. We're working on the candidates. Most people wait until they see who's running and that kind of thing, and then kind of back who they think is best. We're taking a little bit more of a proactive approach. I'm trying to recruit people, kind of like jury duty. Hey, it's your time to serve. You're best for this position. So I'm working with certain individuals that we think would best fit in those spots, at least here locally, and hopefully we can convince them to run, help their campaigns, and support them in any way we can.
Yeah. If you're doing anything with jurors, you want to contact or look up the Fully Informed Jury Association, FIJA, FIJA is what they're known as. And there's a person I had on there, Dr. Roger Roots. He was on back when I was on WEBY. I want to try and get him again. But juries do not know. In fact, we could do a workshop on this, or I could do a special founding moments on juries and the power of jury nullification, which is basically eliminated by judicial review with John Marshall back after the John Jay court. John Jay actually talked about, it's Georgia versus somebody, in one of the initial cases, the power of juries to review, you know, the constitutionality of laws and, you know, various actions and things and with people and, you know, do it themselves as opposed to judges doing it. So there's a fascinating whole area that we can get into in terms of juries. And juries, if they are properly informed, and we have a bill on this, that they have like a Miranda-type instruction, that juries have the power to nullify the laws and acquit on the basis that the law itself is the crime, not the crime itself. It's kind of interesting.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, let me let you go for now. And if you want to come back tomorrow, actually Friday, we've got some more time, any more events or things like that. But I want to get to Michael. And thank you so much. You're welcome to stick on the line, or if you have to go, you have to go. But, you know, I love building our show as the show goes. So thank you. Thank you, David. And let's keep going. Let's keep doing what we're doing.
Absolutely. I appreciate the time, Greg. We'll see you. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks very much. David Jones is a co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers at SRV1776.com. And also you can go to Arise Patriots on their Facebook page, someplace I go a whole lot. All right, let's announce with a great announcement. The one and only Michael Volpe. Let's give him a round of applause.
Hey, Greg, how's it going?
It's going well. A little shameless show business on my part.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is different than what we normally do. This is a whole new approach. It reminds me in some ways of the Pink Floyd show you did, which I thought was brilliant. It was fascinating to take that. But my contention, entertainers should have the same rights as everybody else. Just because you're famous and you have $60 million in your estate doesn't mean that you get treated like dirt by your miserable money-grubbing family. So let me turn it over to you and tell us the story of conservatorship, of how Britney Spears got sucked into this, and how this whole thing works. So tell us the story.
All right. Can I do that? But before that, I was on your show last time and I talked about North Carolina. Can I do a quick update for like three minutes?
Yes. I'm sorry. I think you mentioned that before. But go ahead. Feel free.
First of all, I think I was on, I want to say June 8th. So if you missed it, go find it in June. But basically, I talked about widespread abuses within Child Protective Services in the family courts in North Carolina, and that they swoop in and snatch children, among other things, Child Protective Services. And then also that the courts do a terrible job of investigating child abuse. And one of the cases I talked about was Danielle Jesser versus Jeff Therrington. And this guy Therrington, there's a cross-examination where they talk in depth about how he put his kid into a dog crate. His child was 4 years old.
I interviewed
a witness. The witness said that he threw the kid while the kid was in the car seat. There's lots of photos of the kids with bruises when they come back from custody time with him. And for whatever reason, they won't cut him off, right? So I have an update. He is now this case is out of Forsyth County in North Carolina. I have an update. Now, the update is interesting, but you may be wondering why I'm taking a few minutes out just from the update. He's being investigated again, this time not by Forsyth County Child Protective Services, but by Davie County, according to my information. So that's interesting, but why am I taking time out? Because of the way I'm 100% certain. Do you want to ask me why I'm 100% certain?
Why are you 100% certain, Michael? We didn't
plan this. Because I triggered the investigation, and the social worker investigating it called me. Her name is Kristen, Kristen Rash, Rash. And so she's a social worker within the Davie County, which is somewhere near Forsyth County. Now, some of your listeners may be asking, why is Davie County investigating? I have no idea, but CPS, not just in the U.S., globally, pulls this kind of nonsense. Everything being equal, it's much easier to corrupt if you make it more complicated. So bring in a second place. Is Forsyth County still involved? I don't know. But the other reason I wanted to bring this up is because I talked to Ms. Rash, and when I said that I didn't believe she was going to conduct an honest investigation, she, with moral outrage, said, all my investigations are honest. So her name is Kristen Rash. So the good news is I have elevated this investigation way beyond anything she could imagine. So if it's honest, her career, she's going to be speaking tours, everything, right? But if it's dishonest, Ms. Rash, I'm going to end your career.
Yeah.
So that's the update. Also, we talked about Cherokee County, and these were the folks that actually, their CPS, they would swoop in and snatch children using custody and visitation agreements, which were completely illegal. And when I talked to you, I said a few people have at least been charged with crimes. Now, one of them has been convicted, so I'm going to read from a local article. A former Cherokee County Department of Social Services supervisor pled guilty Monday to his role in using custody visitation agreements, which allowed minors to be taken from their parents without court involvement. David Allen Hughes pled guilty to one count of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. He was charged with a whole bunch of other stuff. He's cooperating. And this may turn out to be the biggest Child Protective Services related scandal in U.S. In a long time. What they did in this county, widespread taking kids for no reason. And so that's the update in North Carolina. As far as Britney Spears.
Before you get into that, I just want to hold on just a second, because this is really important. But what you're saying about Child Protective Services, again, you're so close to this. I think that people, I sort of get a sense when people hear things of when they're going to be shocked. And we think of Child Protective Services as actually protecting children. No. Well, in some cases, yes. I mean, obviously, right. they occasionally get it right. But for the most part, Child Protective Services is more interested in protecting Child Protective Services, you know, and protecting
Correct.
The bad
and
parent
funding,
and perpetuating the cases so that everybody makes money. So I just want to get that out there so people
right.
understand.
And,
that's
and
what we talked about
way,
in previous shows. Yeah, go ahead.
And very similar in conservatorship, what's what we're about to talk about in their funding stream.
Okay.
That's absolutely correct, by the way. Also, you talk about solutions on your show, not defund mm-hmm. police, defund CPS. You know what? If I could end Ms. Rash's career along with every single other social worker in the United States, maybe the world, what an accomplishment. None of these people deserve a job. They're all poorly trained, power hungry. And if Ms. Mm-hmm. Rash is honest, she's one out of a million. All right.
Do you
and
have any investigations
so,
from her that you can publish or link to so people can check her out? Do you have any references to her?
No, that's the thing.
The
reason this is interesting is rarely do you find out about these investigations as they're ongoing. This is supposed to be all privacy. Oh, and I should mention
– Or previous investigations. I'll take
even
those too. I'm just curious.
Investigation, yeah, no. You're
it's all
supposed
sealed?
To keep all of that private – People like her are never scrutinized by people like me, but she will be. And look, the other thing is it appears that Forsyth County didn't tell her who I was. She called me and she had no idea. So she gave her email and phone number to a reporter, an investigative reporter, without realizing who I am. And that's, if you're dishonest, it's going to be the worst mistake of your life.
But you're still,
okay,
did you tell her that you're an investigative reporter at some point and say, hey, you know, just for disclosure?
No,
she knows now.
In fact,
okay. So she knows.
Here is the email that I sent back to her after we talked.
You don't give her address. I don't want her email address or any of the personal information.
No, I'm just going to, I gave her the cross-examination because that's on YouTube. It's Sarah Royster. You can find it on my YouTube channel. I also interviewed, it's called Witness Describes Forsyth DSS Abuse. And then I linked to an article of mine because I said the reason I'm cynical is I've seen this before. People like you cover up for child abuse because a lot of people make a lot of money doing it. I wrote an article called Making Divorce Pay. You can check it out. Its case is very similar to this case where the guy throws his kid while he's in a car seat. That's not enough. The kids come back with bruises. That's not enough. Well, now – This latest one, I didn't mention what it is. This latest one is his son, and he's got twins, a boy and a girl. His son comes back with big bruises and says, my dad hit, well, he didn't say, he got slapped with a big stick and then said his dad did it. And at what point is it going to be enough? And he's got a big bruise, and that was June 22nd. The dad's seen him since then. So, you know, take your time, Ms. Rash. In the meantime, I'm pretty sure 2 4-year-olds are going to get abused, but, you know. It's not your kids, right? So that's the update. You want now we can get into Britney Spears.
Let's do it. Yeah, tell me who she is, how she became famous.
You,
if you know anything about her background, I'd be curious to because
I don't really
know her story that well.
No, she grew up in like a small town, but she got famous. I remember her dating Justin Timberlake when they were like in their teens, and that was a big deal among certain people, but. She's obviously quirky, idiosyncratic, and probably used like more negative descriptions that say something similar. But so first of all, you said, is she being mistreated? And by the way, but before I should have mentioned this as well. You said you're not objective, which means you're not a journalist. You can be a journalist and have a perspective. Look up a woman named Masih Alinejad. She's a journalist and she's anti-Iran regime in all of her entire body of work. And by the way, recently Iranian agents tried to kidnap her out of her where she lives in New York. But, she's not objective, but she's absolutely a journalist. She gets all kinds of videos and interviews all sorts of people and shows you how things work in Iran. But
that's a good point, but I actually write legislation and lobby it. that takes me out of the world of journalism.
Well, you're more than, if you're interviewing people and you're trying to discover information, you're digging for information, you're still a journalist. You may be other things as well.
Makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
She's a journalist and an activist. She's a writer. She's a lot of different things. But Masih Alinejad is definitely a journal, one of the best. She's, I don't know if hero, but I definitely respect everything she does. It's great. Right. But if Iranian agents are trying to kidnap you, you're doing something really big. Number one, I don't think she's treated differently. The thing is that guardianship is extremely corrupt, as corrupt as CPS and family courts. And we'll talk about solutions. Hopefully we'll get into an article that I wrote that wasn't published for, I won't say which place, even though I very much doubt I'll ever work with them again, but they claim that Britney's news cycle had ended, so there's no reason to publish this article anymore. You believe that? Britney's news cycle
That's
never
That's called censorship,
ends,
Michael. That's called censorship.
Right. And the crazy thing is, the day after this editor claimed that Britney Spears was trending again, right? But so lots of people are mistreated, but she went through a mental breakdown in 08. And I think, what is she, 39? Okay. So I would have made her like late 20s. And they put her into temporary guardianship and eventually made it permanent. And so what is guardianship? So basically guardianship is this like state of like judicial, whatever you want to call it, where a judge has determined that you cannot take care of yourself. So it's primarily, it is people who are extremely old, but not only.
Yeah, I was just thinking, this is like people in nursing homes, people with power of attorney, that kind of stuff, where someone has to make the decisions for you because you're dementia, things like that, right?
Right.
That's what it's used for?
That, yes and no. What you said is what they'll claim it's used for, except that some people who have dementia wind up in guardianship and it's all orderly and it's right.
Okay.
A lot of people like Britney Spears, a little bit even younger than her, many older than her, wind up in guardianship because there are vultures like her dad and other of these court actors who got involved, not only in her case, but in other cases. Before I forget, there is a movie on Netflix, if you have it, called I Care a Lot, which is an extremely accurate representation of how these like corrupt guardians work. There's a documentary available on Amazon Prime called The Guardians about a woman named April Parks who is serving 40 years. She is one of these corrupt guardians. And my guess is, now here's the thing, even though she's Britney Spears, we have actually seen not that much reporting on the inner workings of exactly how all of this came about, except to say that she had some sort of a mental breakdown, she was put into guardianship, and then it was made permanent. But what exactly was the argument, who argued what, and how all of it was determined is still somewhat murky, though she has the Free Britney movement, they're backing her. I see a lot of stuff on social media. It's really difficult to know what is and isn't true, except that it was done very quickly. There was no due process. It's completely outrageous to claim that she's incapacitated. Basically,
she's still doing
like
Vegas shows, right? She's still performing. She's still, I've posted some recordings of her during this guardianship.
Right.
And she sounds
fabulous. Here's a woman who can make tens of millions of dollars, but somehow she's incapacitated. That's absurd.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's outrageous. So here's the thing. Guardianship, especially for someone like Britney Spears, is worse than being a criminal. And you have far less rights. So you should look up a guy named Danny Tate. In fact, you can probably get him on your show. He's a Grammy nominated. And I remember asking him, I go, is it true? Is it an honor just to be nominated? And he goes, no. But anyway,
is it what? Say that again. Is it anonymous to be nominated?
He was Grammy nominated. So he said, Danny, is it true? Is it an honor just to be nominated?
Oh, an honor.
And he said, no. And I remember how everybody says it's an honor just to be nominated, right? Because he's Grammy nominated, not a Grammy winner, right? And it was like very harshly, no. Anyway, so he and I think it was the 2018 Whistleblower Summit, he and I were on the same panel, and he described it. He said in 18 minutes without me even being there, I was considered incapacitated. And he said, ironically, if I had committed a crime and they tried to say that I should be not guilty by reason of mental illness or defect, it would be thrown out of court, the same argument that was made to place me in the guardianship. And so what happens once you get in the guardianship, it's basically, it's almost the same as with children, only in reverse. In fact, not every state, but many of these states have what they call adult protective services, which is the equivalent of child protective services. It's just as corrupt, just as stupid, just as needless, right? So what happens? Number one, they have guardian ad litem, they have conservators, they have their alphabet soup of court professionals, and she has her cadre. And guess who is paying for all of these people to manage her money, her estate? Her. She goes on a concert, she pays them. That's what happened with Danny. All of his money went
so
away.
So this is the game, okay? Yeah. I'm going to stop right here because this is really important. So the people that they go after, when they go after celebrities and high-earning, you know, entertainers, for example, the money that they're really going after, all these conservators and judges and, you know, and I guess the attorneys and the social workers and all these people and the conservators themselves, they're after the money. They're after the money they generate,
correct.
And they force
and
the estate
all...
to pay for. Hold on, they force the estate to basically pay for the imprisonment of the person under the conservatorship while they're stealing their money. Is that about right?
Correct, and it's exactly right, and it's often naked and totally cynical. Tom Benson, he used to, I think he's dead now, but he used to own the Saints, and obviously very wealthy. Had a wife who was like as young as his children, and he changes his will and takes all of the money away from his kids and gives it all to his wife, and they immediately filed for conservatorship. And they lost, but this is what people do.
Was he of sound mind and body? I guess that's the in order to make a will, don't you have, is that the criteria? Okay.
Right. If they can put him into guardianship, then the will goes away. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and look, I can even get into it. Casey Kasem was the subject of a fight, and despite what you hear, it was his kids who tried to kill him. They used the guardianship system, and now his daughter, in a naked and cynical move, pretends to be a guardian advocate, Carrie Kasem, and she was the one responsible for everything. Peter Falk was placed, Columbo was placed in the guardianship. His two adopted kids were not allowed to see him. He was isolated. Mickey Rooney was placed in the guardianship, all of his wealth pilfered. It's a lot. There are famous people, but the thing is, for every one famous person, there's thousands and thousands of people we don't know who have many loved ones who are ice. And what happens is, not only can they take your money, they can isolate you. The guardian now determines where you can live, who you can see. And there are, and I care a lot, you see, Carla Grayson is her name, but this is what they do. April Parks, there's a really famous story that was, in fact, I'm going to, if you give me a second, because I quoted, it was in the New Yorker about her, and this is what she did to this couple, Rudy North and his wife, Renny. So this is out of the New Yorker. Rudy chatted with the nurse in the kitchen for 20 minutes, joking about marriage and laundry, until there was a knock at the door. A stocky woman with shiny black hair introduced herself as April Parks, the owner of a company, a private professional guardian. She was accompanied by three colleagues who didn't give their names. Park told the nurse that she had an order from the Clark County Family Court to remove them from their home. She would be taking them to an assisted living facility. Go and gather your things, she said. And they were eventually released, but most people who are put in that position are not released. So they're forcibly removed from their home. They weren't at this hearing. She did this on an emergency basis so they wouldn't know. Mm-hmm. And she got away with it. And guess what? She's doing 40 years. It wasn't just for this one. It was a lot of them. And for every April Parks who gets caught, there's 1,000 who don't get caught. So the first, like, April Parks, if you will, that I came across was a guy named Keith Dobbs, who was just an especially disgusting individual. So he not only targeted elderly, but he targeted veterans in the Memphis area. So, in fact, you know what? You and I talked about this guy once. It was a while ago, so I don't remember what the episode was. And we talked about him because he got charged with 67 federal counts. So he would do something similar to Fuller. And the guy that I interviewed was
67 conservatorships or what? So these are like 67.
67. No. 67 federal criminal counts. That's a lot. That's an enormous.
What kind of charges? What are we talking about?
like he was stealing people's Social Security, stealing people's veterans benefits, misusing their funds, theft.
And he was a conservator? And he was a conservator of these people?
He was a lawyer that worked as a conservator guardian.
Got it. So, okay. That's why I wanted to make that connection.
Sean Higgins, who is a Memphis VA whistleblower who actually brought me the story, he saw him at some restaurant or something, and the guy was driving a Porsche. And he goes, "You're stealing Norman Hughes' money. I'm going to see you in jail." And I don't know exactly what happened with the crime, but he will be in jail. But this is what they do, and it's so easy because unlike a crime, you need to be determined to be incapacitated. What does that mean? It's nebulous, broad, and they use it. And either these judges, they just accept what the guardians say because the guardians are in their court all the time, or they're in on it. And these are rings, and they're rings that are pretty much like these family court rings with these court actors occupying it.
It's the same racketeering, but it's just a different set of rules. Yeah, yeah. I want to hold you up a little bit because I want to get some of the characters here. I want to get back to the rules of how this works once we set this up a little bit. So Britney Spears, let's go back to my earliest thing. I remember seeing posters of her, you know, years and years ago. You know, and she was mid-teens or something like that. Okay, she's a younger sister, Jamie Lynn Spears. I know that because I had, I had a daughter who used to watch. You know, I had to watch her show. I know her parents are probably the type of parents like any of the stars. I'm trying to think of the person that was in Mean Girls. What's her name? Anyway, Laura something. But in other words, child stars. Don't, you know, at 5 years old, you don't walk into Hollywood and say, "Here I am." Your parents have to introduce you. So generally, these are psycho parents, you know, Benet Ramsey, for example, in the beauty contest. So we're talking about parents that are, or like the parents of the Jackson Five. They weren't any great shakes either. But you've got parents that forced their kids into the entertainment world so they can make money off them. That's how this all works, right? Lindsay Lohan,
Natalie
that's what I'm trying
Wood
to think
and
of.
Her.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a longstanding tradition going back to probably Shirley's. Okay. So the question is, what do you know about Jamie, about Britney Spears' early life? You know, you said small town. How did she, where are her parents? Tell me about her parents. I want to know about them and about her and where, you know, where did she stop being a normal kid?
I don't know enough to give you a good answer on that, but she's been famous. Look, I remember her dating Justin Timberlake when they were both teenagers. I remember that because they put it into newspapers that I saw or whatever I saw, right?
Okay.
Well, so if she was a big enough deal that her dating life was something you put in the newspaper, and that was when she was in her teens, she's pretty much been famous all the time. And as I mentioned, as I was cutting you off,
so
Natalie Wood and her sister Lana.
This is like 20, 25 years ago then. You know, when we're talking about this.
I think she did the Mouseketeers initially, and then she grew into a pop star. But look, about 2008, she had this nervous breakdown. Let me read a little bit from CBS.
How famous was she at this point? We're talking, 2008. So she started in the the 80s or 90s? Let me see notes.
The 90s because I think she's still late 30s. But
she's like 40 now or 39.
By the time she was a teenager, her dating life was a big enough deal that her dating life was in the newspaper. All right, you have to be a pretty big celebrity for them to talk about your dating life, especially when you're a teenager. And it was her and Justin Timberlake because they were the
teenager.
Both were, and I think they were both Mouseketeers. Both were famous really early on, but she had a nervous breakdown. So here's what CBS said. In 2008, Jamie Spears, that's her dad, was granted the conservatorship after Britney purportedly struggled with mental health issues and was hospitalized. After Britney was released, Los Angeles court made the conservatorship permanent, giving her father, another co-conservator, power over her finances and medical decisions. Jamie argues that his conservatorship is working. Under his order, his legal team says Britney's estate has gone from being in debt to having a valuation of more than $60 million. Last November, his legal team said Jamie has worked hard to restore Britney to good health, reunite her with her children, and revive her career. And I should say, there is a custody case that interlocks, and I don't know enough to get into it, except that I don't believe Kevin Federline will look very good at all if mm-hmm. and when the truth of that custody case comes out. I think people were leveraging a lot of different things. And basically, I don't know what Jamie Spears, the dad's motivation is here, but he is controlling his daughter.
Okay.
It's disgusting. It's despicable. And hold on, let me read you a little, you know, she gave out a statement. This is what, this is what like set everything off. I've been in shock. I am traumatized. I just want my life back. And then referring to her father, the control he had over someone as powerful as me, as he loved the control to hurt his own daughter 100,000%. He loved it. I packed my bags and went to that place. I worked 7 days a week, no days off, which in California, the only similar thing to this is called sex trafficking. And that's right. She makes money. He controls it. How does that work? She makes tens of millions. He gets to control it. Whether her estate was in debt or not is mm-hmm. completely irrelevant. Everything that's going on here goes against every principle that this country was founded on. Liberty, freedom. She made that money. It's hers. It's not yep. his. He's a scumbag who can't make his own money, so he's, what, living off his daughter? Screw that. I don't know if that's the reason. It doesn't even matter. All right? Whether she squanders it or not is no one's business. Mike Tyson made like $400 million in one day. He woke up and he had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Well, no one put him into guardianship. All right? And you know what? He's got enough celebrity that he made money back. He may never have $300-400 million.
Lots of stars.
So what?
Lots of stars have ended up, you know, a lot of the child stars, I've been watching documentaries and things like that. Gary Coleman ended mm-hmm. up as a security guard in the mall. I mean, there's a lot of people
of
who were stars at some point in their life and then became nothing. So that's pretty common. We got a call in the line. I'll get you in just a minute.
Right.
But this is, but the idea of the parents, and this is, I've seen this pattern before. Mm-hmm. Okay. You look at any of the mm-hmm. parents of beauty pageant kids or movie kids or kids that are in commercials or things like that. It usually doesn't end well unless the kids really want to do it. Now, I was just reading a biography of Britney Spears. I can give you that in a little bit if you're curious. But she's always wanted to be a star. This was her life goal from a very early age. So the question is, maybe mm-hmm. she encouraged her parents to do this, and maybe they weren't thinking of it initially, but I thought, this is a gravy train. And so I don't know where her mother is in this situation, why her guardianship was her father, and why she needed a guardianship in the first place. But we're talking about a major megastar with a fortune and money. She writes her own songs. She's produces stuff. She does these amazing videos, and she entertains in live performances, Vegas, and other places. So she's got a career already set. Mm-hmm. Now, from that, mm-hmm. somehow in 2008, she has a mental breakdown. Where does that come from?
Right.
Do you have some details on that?
Well, look, as I said, she was always idiosyncratic or whatever the term you want to use for it.
What entertainer isn't? Look at Alice Cooper.
Correct. So she yeah. she did. Look, I remember right. what everything that she did. She mm-hmm. she may have had a mental breakdown. So what? You know who had a mental breakdown? Charles W. Post. And he went to a sanitarium run by John Harvey Kellogg, and then he left the sanitarium on his own volition, and he stole their cereal recipe, and then Kellogg's versus Post turned into but no one.
It's an interesting story.
Guardianship. He suffered a mental breakdown. No one put him in the guardianship. Why not?
Well, we used to call it a nervous breakdown.
Way, remember? Loser who never,
remember
right,
what's called a nervous
right,
breakdown?
So what?
People have it.
Right.
They go on meds,
that,
you know, Prozac. you talk to a doctor, you
correct.
Go to a psychologist or a counselor, or,
we
you know, you get it taken care of.
Look,
don't, yeah. But money.
My favorite.
Money is the difference.
My favorite journalist all time is Nellie Bly, and she exposed something like this. It's called 10 Days in the Madhouse, and how easily and without any due process they would put people into a psych ward forever. And they could never leave, even though they're perfectly fine. And that wasn't done for money, ironically enough. But
one flew over the cuckoo's nest.
By the way, I mentioned
we all saw that.
if you saw One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest, what you saw there is Club Med compared to what Nellie Bly saw. Unleavened bread that wasn't made. If you got a pillow, you were lucky. The blankets had holes in them, rats everywhere. Nothing was cooked right. You think it was bad and One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest, you can find 10 Days in the Madhouse for free online. What was there was like a million times worse than these people. There's a woman named Mrs. Shans who was German, and she was there because she didn't understand what the people were saying to her.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's the same thing, and there's no due process. Bly was put into it. They take her in front of a judge. She play acts, and the judge says, well, it sounds like she should be there, so I'll send her there.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I got to call her.
And that's how you get stuck in the psych ward.
Yeah, this is really interesting. Like I say, I post on my Facebook page, a biography of Brittany. We can go more into that. The new caller here, 248 area mm-hmm. code. Let's see if you have a question for Michael Volpe. Welcome to Action Radio. Yeah, you with the typewriter sound in the background. Yeah, you're on.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on live.
Hello?
Yeah, Michael Volpe, you got me. I'm the host, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My Facebook blog disappeared while I was on the phone waiting, so I had the phone number.
Okay.
As far as the conservator and guardianship of Britney Spears, this has come to light only because she is famous. And
right.
what actually, and I find myself an expert of this, what's actually happening across the country is
okay.
systemic guardianship and conservators taking over the probate courts as a mean of human trafficking of elders and disabled people who come. Yes, it's going across the nation. In Michigan, here, you have a hotbed of corruption in the Oakland County probate court.
Right.
And what you have is yes, I'm not Gretchen, but Gretchen appeared
right.
on June 10th recently.
Well,
in
Gretchen's
the,
done, right, she's done a
pardon?
Long investigation of it. She's done a long, Gretchen Hammond is a journalist, and she's been, I met her in 2019, just as she was getting started on the investigation into Oakland County, which is near Detroit. She's exposed widespread abuses in guardianship. And look, I agree with you. And yes, it was her fame that brought this forward, but I Care a Lot has, that's a movie that's based on reality. So this isn't, it doesn't get enough exposure, but to say it doesn't get any exposure is just a lie. To have a popular Netflix movie that's this accurate, the way it was accurate is a lot of victims talk to the producers, directors, and writers to explain how it works. Oakland County, which is where Gretchen Hammond has been investigating, is one place that's shown widespread. As I think it's Clark County, where April Parks was at. There's all sorts of investigations throughout Florida. Obviously, there's a lot more elderly there. And I agree. It's absolutely widespread. It's the same thing as family court, and it's the same reasons.
This is why I do these shows on it. Yeah.
There's no rules.
I want to get, first of all, can I get our caller's first name? And if you have any expertise in this area. Christina? Okay.
I am a victim. And
okay.
I am an activist. And I am a retired teacher. So I know exactly what's going on. And I come from a family of 16 lawyers and judges.
Hold on, Michael. Uh-huh.
And
go
I know
and
exactly what's going on. I've been working with this for over 3 years. And when Gretchen came in, she just nailed it and cracked the code mm-hmm. of what was going on for over 30 years in the Oakland County Courthouse. On June 10th, we had finally the Senate Judiciary hearing. We composed about 6 bills together to make guardianship absolutely impossible. Mm. And we brought those at the Senate Judiciary hearing. Gretchen brought 6 victims from all different counties from the Southeast Michigan area with their stories, with videos, with statistics, with everything. And she brought them to the Senate Judiciary working with a senator who is very adamant about changing the landscape in Michigan and across the nation as well. And what we did is we had this, normally the Senate Judiciary hearings are in Lansing, the capital. She had them right next door at the Oakland County Commissioner's building, right next door to the hotbed of the country of the Oakland County courthouses.
Okay.
It was brilliant. And we had people sitting in the audience that were actually criminals. They were the ones that kept getting these cases of guardianship stolen from families is what they do. As soon as the family walks into the court with their own issues and say, well, I want guardianship of my mother because my, you know, brother is this or whatever, they say, oh, no, 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 you're not going to get guardianship, which is the law in Michigan. It is the law and statute that the family get first priority. What they do is they cancel that and they appoint their own, and they have a whole lineup of these criminal, they were public administrators, but they were fired. But we got the attorney general involved, and she fired them as public administrators, but they're still out there as private attorneys working with the same judges and systematically assigning. Some of them have 400 to 500 guardianships.
Wow.
Under
hold on just a second. I want to hold you up just a little bit here. Michael, I want to hold you up too. I want to, you know, keep this. I mean, I can have you both back on different topics on guardianship. And this is, Christina, this is really interesting. So I definitely want to get in touch with you more about this. But let's get back to the guardianship of this one particular case and how a person gets from, you know, having a mental breakdown into a guardianship, and how the families are using this, not just in the Britney Spears case, but other cases, if you want to relate it to it too. So hold on, Christina.
That.
I want to get
you
Michael a chance. We're going to go back and forth between you two, because I know you both want to talk. It's really pretty cool. Michael, you first, then we'll go to Christina.
Yeah, I have that knowledge.
Hold on, Christina. Hold on, Christina. Michael, go ahead.
So do I. You think I knew Gretchen Hammond's name by accident? So people like April Parks are brought in. They're the court professionals. And they bring in their so-called experts, their shrinks for hire, psychiatrists for hire, whatever. And it was the same thing in Britney Spears' case. There's somebody with an MD, PhD, or whatever letters you want to say that put their name to a recommendation that she's too incapacitated for whatever reason they came up with to be basically to be free. And then that's brought in front of the court, the judges, these guardian like April Parks, she's got a company. So April Parks is in this judge's courtroom probably every week. It's not every day. So they see the guardian, they know the guardian. The person, often they do it on an emergency basis, like you heard from the New Yorker article with Rennie. So you're not even there to defend yourself. The judge hears the evidence and they can decide. You know, these judges.
So then, what do they do? They just arrest you, in Britney Spears' case,
there's a court. It's a court order. There's nothing in the world, in my opinion, more powerful than a court order. So it's a court order, just like what
you're
showed.
You're impounded. You're restricted. You all of a sudden you have instructions for
you
who to report
no
to.
Right.
Tell me how this works,
yes.
And then I'll get to Christina. So, Michael, tell me.
Now that person like Keith Dobbs and April Parks and Carla Grayson, they control your life. They're your guardian. They tell you where to live. They pay your bills. They give you money. They are the gatekeeper to decide who can and can't visit you. So if your kids get out of line, she'll just stop your kids from visiting you. Don't believe me? Lots of stories like that. And
so Britney Spears' case, I heard that they actually implanted a birth control device in her. They told her she couldn't have a boyfriend. They told her she couldn't get married. Mm-hmm. She couldn't do anything that she wanted to. Mm-hmm. And these people actually have that power?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Okay.
Absolutely correct. 100% correct. Another person you should interview, and I'll send her this, is Elaine Renoir at the National Association of Stop Guardianship Abuse. And she said the most people Britney's age who are in guardianship, they're not even allowed to work. But those that are able to work, none of their money is theirs.
So they have to make money to pay the people that are controlling them. And the people that are controlling them take their money from the person in their conservatorship.
Can I tell you what's so crazy? So the guy,
go ahead, then I'll get Christina back.
Norman,
go ahead.
Norman Hughes, this guy, he was living with this lady who was like his caretaker, because he was like not 100% I could take care of myself, but it was voluntary, right? All he had in the world was $150,000. That's all. That's pretty good, though. You know, I mean, he's like
not bad.
He was a Korean and Vietnam War veteran. So they place this guy in a guardianship, and I get in the story 2 years later, and somehow it's down to 80 grand. And I'm trying to figure out, if he's so incapacitated, how come he built up 150 grand out of his lifetime, and by the time you vultures got into it, it's down to 80 grand. And, of course, the 67 federal counts that his conservator Keith Dobbs is facing, it tells you how it did, because they're all vultures.
Oh, it's like musicians that lose all their money to bad managers, and all of a sudden they've absconded with the funds. It's the same kind of thing. Right. We'll manage you. We'll take care of you. Sign on the line. Yeah.
Hold on.
Do people have to sign? Do they have to sign a consent to this, or is it just done to them? Is there any consent form or any you know, like if you go to a mental hospital, generally you have to consent if you're over certain. It's just done.
Right. Rennie, that story out of the New Yorker, that lady showed up with a court order from an emergency hearing. They weren't even there.
Interesting.
And it's probably done in 15 minutes. So I want to, one other thing, one noteworthy thing that I found from this guy Dobbs, the judge, there's a judge named Karen Webster. There were two judges that heard probate cases in this county. He had 20, Shelby County. This was the judge on all 20. Karen
what a
Webster,
surprise.
How does that work?
How did that happen?
Do you know, that's 2 to the 20th power that happened by accident. No one did one thing to her. She's on every case. She was the one that was signing off on every one of his bogus expense reports that are now subject to criminal activity, but no one charged her with anything.
Yeah.
Even though
she
wound up on all 20 of his cases. Go ahead.
Interesting. We have about 14 minutes left, so I wanted two things I'm going to ask you both about. One, how to get out of these things, and another, how to protect yourself from them. But Christina, do you have any insight into the Britney Spears case or cases like it that you can tell us how you go from how someone can actually judge you mentally incompetent, what kind of criteria is that, and then how do they get you in a conservatorship against your will? Do you have some more insight to add on that? Christina?
Yes. Could you just give me the name of the other lady? I don't know who she is because I came in late of the, who's talking right now.
That's Michael. He's not a lady. He's a
Michael,
dude.
Mike Volpe, the
Michael
Volpe. Lady. Wow.
I don't know. I can't see you.
No, that's
who,
okay. No, we're just
person?
Teasing you a little bit. Yeah. Michael Volpe, investigative reporter,
right.
Author.
I didn't think I had a lady's voice, though. I didn't think I had
okay.
a lady's
is
voice.
Speak deeper, Michael.
Is it Michael?
Speak down
Michael,
here.
Michael Volpe. Michael Volpe.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Sorry. I apologize.
That's okay.
Yes. People can fall on the ice, go into an emergency room, and there will be somebody there, perhaps, in this criminal network that will say, oh, you're an elder and you fell, and immediately call APS. APS will then show up at the hospital and
adult
take
protective
the report.
Services?
Yes, and then they will get them in the network where they go to their home and say, well, you know, do you live alone here? I see. And you're falling in the parking lots or whatever. We're going to put you under some type of guardianship. You need help. And they will file the paperwork. And sometimes, you know, the patient will not even know about it. Next thing you know, they put them in a nursing home or rehab, and they're swallowed into the system. And then they will go after their homes. They will, you know, padlock them. We tried to reverse guardianships that we found, and we were successful with a couple of them. Christina Brockovich here in Michigan was successful in reversing a guardian. We followed them all the way to court and found out that they were literally taken. One lady was taken from her home through APS because a call was made by her because all she wanted was a ramp put into her house. And when that call was made, APS was notified. They came and took her and put her under guardianship without the family even knowing about
it. That was my next question. Where's the family? I want to ask Michael about that, too. Where are the families? And we know in the Britney Spears case, the family's in on it. In fact, the father is the one who's like the main culprit here. So go ahead, Michael.
Wayne,
where are the families? Hold on, Christina.
Right.
We're going
to
go back and forth. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Michael?
So obviously, it depends. But look, I did one with a judge named Stanley Ott. And it was the Witten family, and it was actually multiple with the same judge. And Diane Zabowski, who was the court-appointed attorney who they used in the ring. And the family basically has no rights. Sometimes some of the family is trying to put the people in the guardianship, the Ruckey case, but the precursor to the child custody was Sam's parents being put into guardianship by some of the seven children. Why? Because the parents had about $100 million, and some didn't want to split it seven ways. They wanted to split it three ways. And the rest of the children were ordered not to talk to the parents. They have no rights. Harvey Whitten's nieces, Carlos and Mary, they were barred from seeing him by the guardians. These families have no rights. The guardian has far more rights and far more power over these people than the family itself. And yes, they're supposed to be, the family is actually supposed to have like first choice in terms of being guardian and all of that. But sometimes that works out, but if it's corrupted, they just use these professional. Think about April Parks had so much business that she created a company to be a guardian. Obviously, in April Parks' case, they weren't ceding to the family all that often.
Yeah. All right. We've got 10 minutes left. I need you both to shorten up your answers so that we can get more stuff covered because I have a bunch of questions.
Okay.
Christine, you want to add to that about the families whether they're
Gretchen,
in on it or trying to help? Go ahead.
Okay, Gretchen Rachel Hammond is now finishing up a book about the April Parks and Julie Belshi. And she is finishing up a book. I think it's called Up Something American. I forget the title. But look for it because it's going to be published, and it's all about the April Parks and what happened one day when Julie Belshi went to visit her parents in her house. And they were missing. They were gone. They had literally been kidnapped by April Parks, who came in with a court order. They coordinate with the judge, and they dish out these court orders, and they had to go with her, or they were threatened with police action. And they were put, I don't know the scenario after that, put into a nursing home or whatever, but Julie was not allowed to visit them. It becomes the ward now. Same thing, typical of what happened with me as a victim. I went to court to get guardianship in Oakland County with my mother. I thought, oh, it's a no-brainer. First of all, the lawyer told me, and I had the law in my hand. He said, what do you expect to get out of this? I said, well, I'm here to get guardianship of my mother. And he looked at me and said, you'll never get it. I said, why would that be? And he said, because they don't give it here. They get their own. I said, well, that's impossible because it's the law. And my father was a lawyer. So I said, no, we will go to court and I will get guardianship. So when we went to court, guess what? I wasn't allowed to speak. The judge took 5 minutes to reverse my request to say, does everybody agree that she needs a guardianship? And they all said yes. And I didn't say anything. And my lawyer told me, you better say yes or you'll never see your mother again. So I said yes. And that with that yes, the judge reversed my filing to say I requested a guardian instead of me being a guardian. It's completely corrupt, and that's how fast it's done. And with that, she appointed this John Young, who had about 400 guardians under his belt at that time. Well, he took over. He was able to. I'm going, what the hell is going on here? I knew, being a union activist, something was terribly wrong in this courtroom. I could sense it, and I acted upon it.
Okay, I need you to shorten up. We got more stuff to cover. I want to know, are the judges being paid off by the guardians?
Yes, then I wasn't allowed to visit her. I wasn't allowed to visit her. I said, why?
All right. Yeah.
Hold on,
she died.
Too many. You guys got too many details. I need to slow down. I need to get short answers.
Of course, the judges are being paid off.
How's that working?
10 cases that I found. There's like 10 cases I found with this judge, Stanley Ott. He's always in the middle of these corrupt guardianships. I'm supposed to believe he only makes his salary, please. Lots of judges are being paid off.
How are they doing it? Are they doing it with perks, with benefits, with trips? Is it open cash? Is it cash and envelope?
Money under the table.
Mortgage
all of it.
Payoff.
Campaign contributions.
Mortgage payoffs. Okay.
Campaign contributions.
Interesting.
Flat cash under the table. You name it.
Okay. Let's
and
go.
There's so many bad judges in America. It's unbelievable how many bad
judges
there
are.
No, I know.
We need – all right. I need you both to hold on a second because you're both great at talking, and it's excellent. But what we need to do is now with the case with Brittany, I want to get back to the main topic here. We have our own congressman, Matt Gaetz, who is talking about, Free Brittany, wants to get her before Congress. Is this something that Congress should or can fix? And what is Gaetz expecting to do by getting Britney Spears to testify, besides attracting one hell of a lot of attention to this issue? Christina first, then Michael. Christina, what do you think?
Yes.
What can Congress
do? The problem is you can get all the bills passed, which we have done and are on the books, but if you don't have judges that are following those and no oversight onto the judges not following them, it doesn't matter. So more awareness, like what's going on now with the Brittany, like we had Casey Kasem speak at the June 10th Senate Judiciary at Oakland County. She flew in and spoke. And from
Carrie Kasem, who killed her dad using guardianship. You had the woman
who's
responsible for
I need to finish. I need to finish.
Hold on,
Carrie
guys. Yeah.
Listen,
yeah, 5 minutes left.
I'm not going to let her finish because every single thing that Carrie says is a scam. She wants to replicate what she did to her dad. She wants to make that universal.
Let's wait.
Guys, I'm giving you the gong because we're not going
to
argue this.
Who
I need you to. All right. We're not going to settle this here.
No, she didn't. She spoke to the.
I did a long investigation.
Okay, I'm going to put you both on hold until we get this. We've got 5 minutes left. I want to deal with the issue. This is a whole different thing. I don't know about the Casey Kasem case, and I know you're throwing out names and you're throwing out too many details. We don't have time for this. Now, I like having you both on the show, but I want to find out. Let's bring you both back on now, one at a time. I want to know what Congress can do about this.
Yeah.
You know, why is this becoming a national issue? Christina first, and then Michael. So come back, guys.
Federal laws need to be made and enforced. And that's what, in Michigan, what we did June 10th is there is now accountability to the judges and to the these guardians that were being allowed by judges, 400, 500 wards at one time and collecting on the estate.
Who are the judges accountable to?
They were accountable. The judiciary, we've been told to, in fact, I'm filling out one right now.
No.
Judicial Tenure Commission.
Who are the judges accountable to? Is it a civilian citizen board? Is it a legislative board?
Judicial,
is it executive? Okay, who?
No, it's the Judicial Tenure Commission. We have been told by the Attorney General, file a complaint with the Judicial Tenure. That board and commission will decide if the judges show your evidence. They will investigate if they feel it's worth investigating. It takes 6 months. And they will investigate and then file charges.
And who are they? What gives them their authority?
They are appointed by maybe the governor or other people. There's about 10 of them or so. And they sit there. They have terms. And they work. And when these cases come in, they sit down. And there's a couple civilians, too.
Short answers.
But mostly judges.
Turn it up a bit.
Yeah.
I want to know who they are and what they do. Okay.
Yeah. They will mail you back if they feel it's worth investigating, and then they spend about 6 months actually investigating the case, and then they will come up with a decision as to whether to file charges against that judge, remove him, or whatever. But
hold on. That's it. Stop. Stop right there, Michael.
Okay.
We've got 3 minutes left.
Yes, Congress can make a law outlawing guardianship in its entirety, making the entire system disappear. That's what should happen. There should be no guardianship. Due power of attorney, Carrie Kasem did kill her dad. He wrote her out of his will, gave his money to his new wife and their daughter.
Michael, stop. Stop with that case. Stop with that case. Michael.
Scamming everyone.
Michael, stop that case. I don't have time for that. All right. It's a separate issue. We'll talk about it another time. Here's the next thing I want to know. All right. So mental hospitals, there was a time when especially husbands could have their wives committed when the divorce laws were a lot different. And the mental hospitals themselves seem to have disappeared. What it seems to me, and I want your both opinion on this, we've got about 2 minutes left, is that what used to be people being able to be committed to mental hospitals and be put away in these horrible places, like Michael and I talked about earlier, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest Plus, have been replaced by legal guardianships and guardian ad litems, and they don't actually put you away in a mental hospital, but they'll put you away in a nursing home. They'll take away everything you have. They'll take away your rights. They'll take away, you know, your finances. They'll make you pay for your own imprisonment. Okay, so am I onto something here? Let's start with Michael, then I'll get to Christina. Michael, does this make sense that the mental hospital, the power these people used to have in the hospitals, has now been transferred to the family courts and to the guardians and the judges and the attorneys?
And the nursing homes, as they showed in IKEA, the nursing homes are often in on it. Yes.
Are they being paid off too?
All sorts of power. Absolutely. A lot of them, as they showed in I Care a Lot. Look, I think Harvey Witten was one of several people. I don't remember which nursing home they threw him in. But, of course, this is how they get business. It's not any different than Kids for Cash with the juvenile detention centers. They're basically looking for these wards as their business.
Okay. All right. So this is interesting. So obviously I'm going to try and contact my congressman, Matt Gaetz, and I'm going to send him the show afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's already got the link to it. I was hoping he might join us, but you never know. Christina,
mm-hmm.
Mental hospitals to judges and family court. Short answer, we've got a minute.
Absolutely. Yes. You have to look up The Fortress, which was the award-winning article, five-part, that Gretchen wrote on Michigan. And in there, it will show
you. No,
you
just tell me. Just tell me. Where's the answer?
Yes.
Is it Congress? You know,
there,
is it
there is,
are the, have we gone from mental hospitals to judges, juries, and or judges, you know, lawyers and nursing homes?
Yes.
30 seconds.
Number one, we have a shortage of mental health facilities. Number two is how do you determine if somebody is mentally incapacitated? Well, normally your family doctor will, but they avoid family doctor opinions and they bring in their own, which takes a matter of three questions. Who's the president? What time is it? Okay. And you missed one. So we've got you down as mentally incapacitated. That's how they do it. And then
the questions for a stroke. You know, it sounds like somebody to die
right.
Someone has a stroke. Okay, no, both of you, hold up. We got 3 seconds. No, we're done.
Avoid your family
we're done.
Doctor. Yep.
We're done. We need to explore that family doctor idea more because I want to find out. And in fact, I'll get you back and Christina too, probably on separate occasions, because I want to find out more about the process and how this actually works. Hey, listen, thank you both. Thank you, Christina, for joining us. Thank you, Michael. This has been pretty incredible, even though we had it got a little feisty there for a bit. All right, so we're off the air. Greg Penglis here for blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. You can support us at patreon.com/actionradio. And also, if you want to listen to us while you're driving, just simply put Action Radio into your phone, put it in your car audio, and there we are. Back tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock. Thank you all very much.